Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 102. Continuing our positional previews for the 2024 fantasy baseball season, heading to the outfield. This will be outfield part one, going through ADP 1 through 30 for this episode, and we'll go deeper next episode. But before we get to all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan, how we doing, my friend?
Good, kind of in a million places at once. I remember a couple weeks ago I told you usually not much happened, like in our little intro preamble here, not much happens between Tuesday and Thursday on our shows, but that wasn't really the case this week. Pretty wild week in fantasy baseball industry for sure.
Yep, most definitely a wild week. We're all kind of in the same waiting pattern, I guess, to see where we go this year, because we will go, and that is all that matters. And that leads us into our listener leagues. Those are going to happen, I want to say. It's just a matter of where, not if. That's where we're at right now. That's all we can really say at this point in time. That's all we know. But the plan would be to hopefully have them on the NFBC. We wanted to have that auction format. That is the goal. We are all waiting and seeing, and with that, We're still taking signups. We're actually like halfway to team four already.
I know.
I forgot. I got two more today. I forgot to put on a list. So we're getting almost to four full leagues, which is amazing. Again, if you guys go more than four, we'll do it, and then I'll announce the prize after four. We still haven't tweeted it out yet because of circumstances, as most know. Right now, we're kind of waiting on that. But yeah, we got a ton to get ready for. We're looking forward to the season. The train ain't stopping here. That's all I'm going to say. And that's why we're kicking it off with the outfield tonight. ADPs 1 through 30. We're going to go through that and use ATC projections. So without further ado, Ryan, the board, what do we got here?
Got the board. All right. Same exact concept as last time. Got our top 30 by ADP. So we're going to do, I think, well, hopefully, I say this and then like we never do it, but hopefully more of a quick hit as we cover like all 30 of the top 30, or at least most of them. And then next week with part two, we'll cover like outside of 30 and sleepers and stuff like that. But yeah, we're going to try and hit the entire top 30 tonight. Got the top 30 by NFBC ADP up here over the last 10 drafts. So this is pretty recent stuff. And then again, our friend Ariel Cohen and his ATC projections, which were released earlier this week, are color-coded for convenience. And color-coded compared to the top 75. So that's what we did. So like what we've been looking at in the last few positions has just been the top 30. And then like every single time, obviously everyone on the right side turns red because that's the bottom of that population. We're comparing everyone to the top 75, assuming like a 15 team, five outfield format. So that's what we got up here. A lot of first round outfielders, which is kind of like that stuck out to me. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 for eight of the 15 first round in a 12 team league. Eight of the top 12 are outfielders. So Mookie Betts, maybe second base, but whatever. That stood out to me. You've got a really like elite core. There are definitely some cliffs that we will talk about as we go through the top 30. But with so many guys in outfield, there presumably are so many different types of profiles. This is certainly not like a lot of the other positions that we've talked about, like obviously catcher, first, third, where it's a lot of similar type profiles. It's easier to compare some of these guys. With outfield, there's a vast array of different types of guys here.
Yep, a vast array of different guys. So it'll be fun to break all that down. And obviously, we'll start at the top, and there's no surprise who this is. One, Ronald Acuna Jr., who last year hit 337 with 41 home runs, 73 stolen bases, 149 runs, 106 RBIs, and you look at his projections, Ryan. Ridiculous,
dude.
Oh. Ridiculous. That's all I could say is, and I had the pleasure of being on Beat the Shift this past week. We mentioned Acuna and just the projections. Still, like, just boom goes the dynamite. It just blows the rest of the field out. So I'll let you have the floor on this one. Like, just projections alone, he still is far and away elite.
Yeah, I mean, there's no floor for me. Just take Ronald Acuna first. If you're even considering other guys, you're getting too cute. And since we have 30 outfielders to cover, like, there's really nothing else I got. Like, the dude's a beast, best player in fantasy. You need to take him at number one every single time.
Yep. Nothing too crazy on that one. The next outfielder off the board around pick three is kind of sharing two and three with Bobby Witt Jr. pretty much in every draft, and that is J-Rod Julio Rodriguez. Dude's going to be 23 this year. This will be his third season in baseball, coming off of 275 average, 32 bombs, 37 stolen bases, 102 and 103 in the runs and RBI department. Elite season. Second half just went bonkers to collect most of those stats, which was great. Continues to show growth. Projections have him as a 30-30 player, which is insane. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on J-Rod?
Yeah, the projections basically say a full repeat. Totally fine with Julio number two overall. We've talked about Bobby Witt, who I think is a fine alternative there too, at the number two slot. Really no bad choice here. Julio, it is unbelievable that, like, age 23, he's got two $35 fantasy seasons under his belt already and has already gone 30-30, and the skill support is absolutely there. So, again, similar to Acuna, like, I don't really have anything else. Like, the lineup isn't that great around him, but, like, come on. You can take him second if he drops. I've seen him drop to, like, three or four.
Yep.
A couple drafts. I think that's a gift as well. Go with Julio. I really, if I'm trying to pick nits, there really isn't anything outside of maybe the lineup, but that's it.
Yep, that would be it, and it's nothing that concerns me. I still have Witt too, but again, I will not argue with anybody that takes J-Rod number two.
Yep.
Both outstanding options, and that kind of, when a projection site gives someone 30-30, that's very rare, very rare. So you got, obviously, Acuna's in a stratosphere of his own. Like, I can't remember if it was this show we talked about or some other ones. It's crazy when you think, you know, Acuna brought in over $70 in value last year, which is asinine when you really think about it. But, like, J-Rod and Witt, they have $60 upside, which is crazy to think about as well. And that's why they're just kind of, to me, locked in as the twos and threes pretty much right there.
And I think this next guy, not to take over your host role, I think this next guy is $60 upside too, to be 100%. Honest with you.
Corbin Carroll. We'll get to him in just a second. I want to get to Thomas's comment here. How many of the top three guys hit 40-40 this year, Acuna, Witt, and J-Rod?
How many of those three hit 40-40? I'll say zero.
Yeah, that's a fair one.
Just my smart-ass answer, but, like, 40-40 is so freaking hard.
It's elite. It's elite company. It's elite company. Before, like, Acuna's world, it was Bonds, it was A-Rod, it was Canseco. I want to say that was it.
We had a Matt Kemp in there, I think.
He did 40-40. Get to 40-40. Right. But that's, like, about, it's rarefied air. It's like hitting 400 almost. 400 is harder, but it's one of those things. Like, you have to do everything perfect.
Yeah.
In this era of stolen bases, that could help. Yeah, I'll take the under. I'll take the answer would be over under half. Like, doing at least one would be the betting line, I'd imagine. I think a lot of people would take one, the over. So I think you could have some good money on the under.
Yeah, if I had to bet, I'd go, like, Acuna.
Yes.
Then Witt, then J-Rod. I don't know if J-Rod runs enough in Seattle to get to 40, but
I think that's fair.
I say zero.
I completely agree with that that ranking system there as well. Now, Corbin Carroll, as you mentioned, I agree. There's a lot to like about Carroll. Early draft season, I had him around J-Rod. I was debating taking between the two a couple times. I think I took Carroll one, J-Rod the other time. Carroll, big, big first full season in the bigs. Hit .285 with 25 home runs, 54 stolen bases, and 116 runs scored. He might not get you the RBIs the other guys do, but there is definite power speed. The question, I guess, is, do you trust the shoulder situation that did tap into the power? If that shoulder is good to go, I'd imagine this is a 30-ish 50 guy, which is insane.
I mean, in the forecaster, we did an upside of 30-60. 30 homers, 60 bags. That's the only, like, thing I can find with Corbin Carroll is just some concern with the shoulder, which happened in late June. Yep. So right around when we can do these kind of first half, second half splits, did only hit 8 home runs in the second half. The power was down, but like to me, man, it wasn't, was not a power collapse in the second half. He ran like hell.
Yep.
He had 30 stolen bases in the second half. Wasn't pressing at the plate or anything like that. Strikeout rate was pretty much the same first to second half. I'm not that worried about the shoulder. Like the power dip could just also be simple variance over a season. Like the guy's first full season, pitchers are adjusting to him. And like, sometimes that just happens where there are changes in underlying skills from half to half. I mean, that happens all the time. So if it was like a power collapse with the shoulder, I'd be a little bit more concerned, but like even with the shoulder quote unquote injury in the second half, still went 288 home runs and 30 steals. Like that's almost like a floor. I think if the shoulder thing isn't anything more serious. And I think if it was more, again, not a doctor, far from it, but I feel like if the shoulder thing was more serious than it was, like it would have come up in the second half and shut down, stuff like that, but it just never happened. So I'm not that worried about it. Wouldn't be surprised at all. So to go back to Thomas's question, I don't think Carroll has the power to go 40-40, but I do think Corbin Carroll could be the number one overall player in fantasy this year.
Okay,
that would not surprise me at all.
That's very fair. And I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised. I think we all agree Acuña. It's Acuña's role to lose. Let's put it that way. But I'm with you. Like Acuña feels like the LaDainian Tomlinson in fantasy back in the day. You just take him and you have that leg up on the rest of the league right out the gate. It's pretty wild stuff.
Yeah, kind of. It is. How many? For those old
enough to remember that, Ryan.
Yeah, I remember LT in college. Come on. Last 20 years, how many guys have repeated at number one?
Oh, I'm guessing it's like none.
I think it's one. Actually, yeah. No, it's none. One person did it twice. I think it was Pujols, but not in consecutive years.
It's such a tough thing to do. Like I know Ron Chandler talks about it a lot and everything. Just to basically earn even first-round value is difficult just because the bar is so high in the first round. So we've talked about it on other shows, just talking about players like this season in the past. Like your first round pick, you just want that stability that you know you're going to get these stats and kind of go from there. Cause to earn the technical dollar value of a first round pick is very hard to do because it's such a high bar. So you just want that guy to be very, very good. If they can hit their projections, you're almost good to go. And hopefully they exceed those projections. Mookie Betts, the fifth outfielder off the board, also has a second base eligibility this season. So we've talked about him before. We talked about 307, 39 homers, 14 steals, 126 runs scored. Anything else on Mookie Betts?
No, not really. For me, he is a tick behind J-Rod and Carroll at the position and maybe behind our next guy.
He is behind our next guy.
So who is your boy, your man?
A little biased on this one, but yes, but, he's behind this guy.
Yeah, no, nothing much to add on Mookie. Check out our second base episode, which was either last week or a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, actually, it was. It was last Tuesday. You're right. You got it.
Feels like three weeks ago.
Long time ago. Yeah. All right. The sixth outfielder off the board, that one guy we're talking about, my guy, Kyle Tucker. Just love everything about Kyle Tucker. I do it perennially with Kyle Tucker. Hit 284, 29 and 30. If you remember back, it should be 30. 30 is very controversial on what should have been a home run, but wasn't a home run. At least I'm biased in that regard. Would have been three straight 30 home run seasons. He's seen the stolen bases continue to increase. The RBIs are there. Run production's great. Like, there's nothing I don't like about Kyle Tucker. Gets better and better year after year. They're going to continue hitting him in the middle of the order now, which we saw more often this past year, even with Dusty, which is good. At least he should hit in the middle of the order still with this new team and new manager in play. But regardless, it's an elite offense and an elite bat, so I love Kyle Tucker.
And I think leagues were lost by that home run decision last year. Yes. I believe it was Eric Cross, our friend over at
the Tool Shed Pod.
There you go, the Tool Shed Pod. Good podcasting. You could tell I was about to draw a blank. Mm-hmm. I think he like either lost a league or didn't win a league because of that decision on the last day. I wrote in the baseball forecaster for Kyle Tucker, if we could draw up the most well-rounded skill set in this book, his might be it. I love it's a complete package for me and what I'm looking for in the first round. It's somebody who has the track record, the team, and the balance. Really, the balance of Kyle Tucker category-wise just gives you so many different ways to go with your next few picks and really sets the foundation for your entire hitting thing. That's one of the reasons why I'm not as high on Mookie Betts. You don't get like the bags that you would with some of these other options early on. So Kyle Tucker just gives that great balance. You make a great point, Bubba, with Dusty gone. I would hope that Kyle Tucker ascends from the number six slot in the order. Kind of hope it, I don't know, three or four in the lineup would be great, but I also hope he still runs too. So
yeah,
impossible to tell, but I don't think there are much safer investments in the first round than Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, and that's why I love him, and I kind of bump him up because I don't really have any questions about what Kyle Tucker does outside of an injury. You can I feel 30-30 is just written in stone with him pretty much, with over 200 runs in RBIs and a very solid batting average. Like, you're just getting a great five category contributor, which is all I want at that point in the draft. Now, the next...
I'll bring up just a quick listener question. Do you guys play in outfield position specifically from PPBDL, left field, center field, right field? Left field drops off really quick. I have before, I believe, on Yahoo formats. I don't currently.
No, I do not anymore. I've seen people that do that, though. I'm in a long-term salary dynasty league with some buddies back home that I always tell myself I'm going to stop playing, but I still don't because I'm just, you know me, fantasy baseball. And that one still has left field, center field, right field. But it's annoying.
That's
wild. So
that's awesome.
Annoying. It's annoying.
If other folks do have those leagues, let us know.
We can play around with it.
It'd be fun to kind of check into that stuff.
Yep, we can play around with it for sure. The next outfielder off the board, ADP of 8, is one Fernando Tatis Jr. This is a player that is growing on my interest levels in draft season, like to the point where I kind of want to push him into the top 5 potentially. Last year in 141 games, obviously the late start finishing his PED suspension, he hit 257 with 25 home runs and 29 stolen bases, 91 runs scored, 78 RBIs. Obviously, you'd hope for more there. Projections have a little more for him there. And I think, you know, this dude, when right, is a 40-plus home run dude and can run for days if they let him. So I'm a big fan of Fernando Tatis Jr. I get the, putting him 8th if you want some of his other guys ahead of him. But if you want to push him up, I'm not going to argue that either. Because I think, we mentioned 40-40 guys. He could be a 40-40 guy.
I'll push back on the power. I don't know if he has 40 home run power anymore.
I'll say he did in 2021. I was like, where are we going with that one?
So the 2021 thing, and that's kind of where I'm going with it, is like it was pre two things. It was pre-shoulder injury and pre-PED suspension. So I don't know that Fernando Tatis can do that again. The barrel rate in 2023 compared to 2021 basically got chopped in half. Still good, 11% last year. But it was 21% earlier. A lot of our are in 2021 in that what I think will be Fernando Tatis' career year. I just can't, and I think a lot of projections may bake that in, not knowing some of the contextual factors around Fernando Tatis. So I'm actually not in on Tatis at the price. Obviously, he's a hell of a talent, could steal 40 bags for sure and hit the 30 home runs last year. Like I get it. I like the options ahead of him a lot more, and I like Freddie Freeman more than Fernando Tatis in the middle of the first round. So for me, I'm not totally sold on that 32 home run projection. Could very well be wrong, but that's where I'm at.
I guess like when we talk about players that could fall to you if you're in the back, say third of a 15 teamer. I think it has happened in our listener league. If like Tatis somehow falls to me, I'm like, okay, let's dance. I'm pretty pumped when that happens because I believe there is a lot of upside there. But again, I could be wrong.
I'd be fine with him late in the first round. I just don't think. Yeah, you're right. He did fall to you at 10.
That's what I'm saying. When I see that happen, I'm very happy when I see that kind of thing happen.
The hell's his ADP again?
It's 8.
Eight. So yeah, let's. And he went after Kyle Tucker. He went after Trey Turner. I took Freddie Freeman at six. So
he's your boy. You have to.
So I'm kind of backing up what I said. But yeah, I'd consider him around 10, but not until after Freeman, Tucker, Strider even.
Okay. Well, we shall see how that pans out later.
I'm making a note for November. Our bet episode about Fernando, actually.
Yeah, I like Fernando quite a bit, obviously. All right, Juan Soto, ADP of 11, going to the Bronx, short porch. That'll be said many times when they talk about Juan Soto this year. Sure, that'll help, but he's just a great pure hitter, period. So I don't care what ballpark he's in. He still hit 35 home runs last year with 12 stolen bases, hit 275, 109 ribbies, 97 runs. He had that slow start to the season, but finished in gangbusters. You talk about first half, second half splits, Yahtzee. So Juan Soto, big boy stuff. I expect a monster season from him. His contract year, he already basically said, we'll talk after the season. He's not even really looking into a new deal with the Yankees. So this is one of those I could see some nice Juan Soto numbers here. Let's put it that way. And I think if you are a back into the first round drafter, it's a good guy to set your team up with. Let's put it that way. Cool. Wow, we're gonna have a lot of fun on our bets episode, I can tell.
For me, yes, Juan Soto is freaking amazing. He's great player.
Is that the noise you make when you talk about someone that's amazing?
He's young.
Yeah.
He's amazing in real baseball. In fantasy, dude, he has a 20% walk rate. Like, that doesn't do anything for you in baseball.
Number one pick in fantasy in baseball. Outwards.
In OBP.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Yeah, in OBP. And that is a good distinction. Juan Soto in OBP leagues, because he walks so much, does approach that top five, I think, just because the boost 100%. He gives you. Couple things with Soto is, so yes, that's the big thing, is just the walk rate so big. I just think the hype, deserved hype in real baseball, is carrying over a little bit too much to our fantasy game. Projected to hit by ATC 280 again, which is fine, but
J-Rod is projected to hit 280 also
and also go 30-30, and Juan Soto's nowhere near that. 11 steals, 37 homers. I worry about Soto hitting in front of Aaron Judge. Are you going to run when Aaron Judge is up right after you? And I also worry a little bit. Everyone talks about Yankee Stadium, and yes, it'll be a boon to Juan Soto and his home run capability, but what Yankee Stadium is one of the worst parks in baseball for left-handers for hits. So I actually would take the under on Juan Soto and his projected 282 batting average. So yes, he could very well hit 40 home runs, but I'm taking the under on 280 batting average. I'm taking the under on 11 bags for Soto. So I'm not drafting him in the first round.
It's good to know. Hope we draft next to each other in a draft at some point in time. That's what we do a lot.
We've only done,
but not where, not in the back, not in the back end. We don't draft next to each other, unfortunately. Yeah. I think you're down. I agree. The stats are the stats when it comes to the ballparks, taking away left-handed, potential, but this is an elite hitter we're talking about here. We're not talking about Alex Verdugo like we did before. This is Juan Soto. He's still going to hit just fine. I'm not as concerned with Juan Soto's hitting ability. So yeah, put his name down to discuss on the bets sheet at some point.
I have put Juan Soto in his 32% fly ball rate, which is terrible. That's ground balls can't be home runs, Bubba, in Yankee Stadium. So I have put that down on our bet sheet here.
Okay. We'll see. Looking forward to that episode already. All right, let's go to the next one here. 12th pick off the board, Aaron Judge. In the bright side of it, Aaron Judge doesn't play as often as usual. Soto's not hitting in front of him anyways. So you got that going for you. Aaron Judge only played 106 games last year to his toe issue. 267 average, 37 home runs, only 79 and 75 runs in RBIs. 3 stolen bases after a monster 2022 season. That's just it's a guy I understand he's great. He could be a top 3 guy if he stays healthy. There's no denying that. I just don't take Aaron Judge very often. Like at that point, I'll take J-Ram. I'll take a shortstop. I'll take a pitcher. That's just me. I've always kind of been anti-Judge, and it's backfired once for me. So I'll take my chances.
So I think our bet is Juan Soto versus Aaron Judge. End of your fantasy value. I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
We know you've drafted Judge. I know.
Aaron Judge, projection-wise, projected to be the number 5 hitter in baseball this year, and he's the 10th hitter off the board. The projections love Aaron Judge. The power metrics are the exact same as they were in his 62 home run season. Yes, the injury last year, it was a fluky foot injury crashing into a wall. Like, it was not a muscle thing, an oblique or something that recurred. The previous two seasons for Aaron Judge, he had 630 plus plate appearances. And Juan Soto will be in front of Aaron Judge, not stealing bases, staying on first base. As Judge drives him in. So I actually, in a .277 projected batting average for Judge, I have no idea what the stolen base output will look like, but I think Aaron Judge could have an absolutely monster season. I think he's being discounted for injury a little bit too much, which is kind of weird for me to say, because I'm very injury risk averse in the first round.
Sounds like quite the bias you have there for Aaron Judge.
But again, 660 plate appearances on average from 21 to 22. And again, fluky foot injury last year. I think he's going to mash, man.
If for a player that's really not that good, do you know who the 6th overall outfielder was in the Razzball Player Rater last year?
Juan Soto.
Yeah, that was Juan Soto, actually.
Good for Juan. Proud of your boy.
All right, let's go to the next.
Number 6 on Razzball Player Rater.
Yep, I got it up right now. Going Acuna, Mookie, Carroll, J-Rod, Tucker, Soto.
Oh, at outfield.
Okay. At outfield. So I said it's number 6 outfielder.
That's.
I got to scroll for Aaron Judge for a while. Yeah. He's 18th. Yeah, he's 18th. Okay. All right, the next outfielder.
The bet has been placed on my little freaking scratch pad over here. Electronic. I don't actually write it down like you do.
Yeah, that's how you get lost in the cloud. Next up, the next outfielder off the board with an ADP of 19, Yordan Alvarez. I love me some Yordan. 293 last year, 3177 and 97. He will not run, but probably one of the best pure power hitters we've seen in a long time, because with the average he brings with the power, he's elite. Like, I would take a straight up bet Yordan versus Judge if you'd like right now. I'll take that one all day long. You got a little squirmish on that one, didn't you?
Because I kind of like Yordan.
Yeah.
I'm not going there, man.
Yordan's going too low for me, because I think it's the injury bump that's got him down. If we knew he'd play at least 140 games, like, without really any issue. And last year he played 114, 135, 140. Like, if you give me 140 games of Yordan Alvarez, this dude's a easy first round pick for me.
Yeah. And if you were to ask me, like, who in 2024 is going to have the Matt Olson season?
Yeah, bingo.
Even more likely than Matt Olson himself, I think it's Yordan Alvarez. All he has to do, and I make it sound like it's easy, but all he has to do is get like 650 plate appearances, just avoid the IL. Granted, Yordan Alvarez has not reached 600 plate appearances in any of the last 3 seasons, missed all of the 2020 COVID year pretty much. So that is a concern, but I would argue probably the best hitter in baseball. And so there's 2 downsides. The one is, I just talked about the health. You do need to have a plan for stolen bases if you take Yordan. In this stolen base environment, getting a 0, especially early in the draft, like, it's tough. You have to have a plan to come back from that. Or if you think in your, you know, home leagues, non-overall, if you have a plan to punt steals, you could absolutely start with like a Yordan, Matt Olson 1-2 or something like that. But just have a plan for stolen bases if you take Yordan. That's kind of all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you there. It's one of those, this time next year when we're doing our positional previews, I hope Yordan's not even on this show. I hope he's util only, because all he did was DH. That made him play 150-some games. Like, just don't even put him in the outfield. I would love to see him not even on this show next year. Let's put it that way. Michael Harris II is the next outfielder off the board, ADP of 31. And that ADP keeps climbing, folks. And I think it's because people are catching on to just how good this guy is. And I'm included in this one. I've always kind of been like, We saw this ups and downs and this, that, and the other. But in the end last year, 293 average, 18 homers, 20 steals. He's a 2020 bat who hits for a great batting average. And he gets clowned upon because he's at the bottom of the order. But let's remember, bottom of the order on elite, elite offense. And all it takes is like an Ozzie Albies injury, and he's batting at the top of the order again. So I know we've talked about Harris a lot, and I'm starting to buy in a lot more on a Michael Harris. It's still a rich price tag. It's the 2-3 turn. But if you're building your team accordingly to get this kind of production, it's pretty nice.
Yep, agreed. It is worth noting this is a pretty big drop in terms of like ADP from Aaron Judge and Yordan. So Judge was 12, Yordan 19, and then it's Michael Harris at 31. So just taking the outfield, there's really Yordan's like the only second round hitter in the outfield after 8 of them going in the first round. So just, I don't know, kind of a random non-actionable observation, but pointed out anyway. Michael Harris to me is like a fine second round pick. I think we can explain away the early struggles from 2023. He missed 3 weeks of the back issue and then had, I think it was a knee in the first half as well, and got right back to doing Michael Harris things. So basically 3 of the last 4 half seasons, and all 3 of his last healthy half seasons, he's been elite. And you bring up a great point about the batting order. What are the odds that the Braves get full seasons again from Acuna, Albies, Olson, all those guys at the top? Like, not great. And so, I mean, if anyone goes down up top, Michael Harris, like, could go through the moon. So I'm a huge, huge fan. And again, he's got the balance. Got that batting average, 292 projected batting average. That's third best at the position,
yep,
behind Acuna and Alvarez. Like, don't sleep on that. That's super important. So it's just someone that gives you a lot of balance from a category standpoint, and I think is pretty safe and could even be another level to the guy because he's so young.
Yeah, I know we're not doing bold predictions. I don't want to be completely foolish here, but if he did spend a season batting second with the skill sets we're seeing, hitting 290+, like, this is a 30-30 dude that could score like 110 runs. Like, it's pretty wild, the ceiling that I think Michael Harris could come into play. Again, getting back 23, super young. There's a lot more we could be seeing, like Ryan said, to this ball player, which is quite intriguing.
Yep. Forecaster, we said with 600 plus plate appearances, upside of first round value. So basically, yeah, what you just said.
I totally get it. Makes a ton of sense. Like I said, the more, that's why I love, you know, as much as we make fun of us drafting early, between drafting early and doing content, it opens my eyes up to things that I did not believe in like November in a big, big way. And Harris is, I will admit, 100% a guy I've done a complete 180 on this one. Like, I'm very much interested in Michael Harris a second. Now, we talk about how sharp the industry is now. There's a lot of great people providing great talent, a lot of great players. I don't even provide talent, just great players in general. And the ADP for Lou Bob, Luis Robert, stands out to me with an ADP of 34, where I think it's people are getting wise to the fact that this guy's a perennial injury concern. Last year, finally played 145 games. First time in 4 years, his entire career, he played over 100 games. And he did kind of what we've always said he could do. 38 home runs, 20 stolen bases, hit 264. You know, the counting stats were down because, well, the White Sox suck. But, and so that also obviously puts him down. But I think it's one of those, if we were to trust Lou Bob's health, he's higher than 34 is what I'm trying to say. I guess it's a dude that we know the power is legit. Like, let's just say 35, 20s an option here. That projects out to like Mookie Betts outside of the average. And I'm just doing the homers and stolen bases. I'm not trying to compare the player, but I'm just saying, like, to have him at an ADP of 34, I guess shows the smarts of the group is what I'm trying to say. And I end up drafting Lou Bob a lot. I drafted him last year. I'm willing to take a chance on a player like that, knowing the risk that's there. What about you?
I have not had. I don't think I've like ever drafted Luis Robert, and maybe that's a flaw of mine. Like, I and he had the 590 plate appearances last year, and so, I mean, sometimes guys just get hurt early in their career, and then they become stable later on. That the Nelson Cruz path.
That involves some needles, but yes,
it's true. I'm not making allegations here of.
We don't want to do that in these days, right? Robert. Right
now. No, definitely not right now.
Yeah.
That's probably a flaw of mine, is just thinking Robert is a little bit too much injury prone than he actually is, coming off of 590 plate appearance season. Was interesting to note. I think there's some batting average, not batting average risk, but sure. Luis Robert, like, pretty much changed his approach completely in 2023. The K rate, a ton more strikeouts, but a ton more fly balls and a ton more power. It kind of went back to who he was in 2020 and 2021 for what it's worth. It's more of just a batting average power trade-off. Stolen bases are going to be there, like 83% success rate. He can run. So maybe I'm talking myself into Luis Robert a little bit because, again, that B word is pretty damn balanced. And even the counting stats last year, like, yes, the White Sox were really bad. Still had 90 runs, 80 RBI.
It's like, not it's horrible. Not
awful.
Yeah. That's, I guess, just why I like him. Like, I know that if he just somehow plays like 140 games, there's a really good floor with Lou Bob. And I think there's a ceiling of, say, the supporting cast, and I'm not counting on the White Sox to like really get it together. But what if, you know, they put together a 70 win season? Like that means they're going to score some runs once in a while. Like, he could run into a pretty decent season at that ADP. Like, would I still take Michael Harris? Yes. 100%.
Yes.
But I think Robert's a guy that in the years past, everyone kept hoping he'd stay healthy, and he's still like a second round pick, bordering on like a back end first round pick at times. So that's why I opened up saying the fact he's dropped down to 34 actually after doing it is kind of like a whoa, that kind of stood out to me as a. I'm not saying people are wrong because it's only 1 year, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me, or fool, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me type thing. But it was kind of a surprising thing. I thought he'd come back into the, you know, mid to early second round world after that. So
agreed.
All right. Another little drop off here. 15 pick drop coming up to Adelis Garcia, ADP of 49 right now. And he's a guy that I think the doubters have kind of gone away now. I think I've heard people admit that they're just wrong. He hit 245 again this last year. He's basically been a 243 to 250 hitter for 3 years. He's shown the power, 39 home runs last season. The counting stats are great. 9 stolen bases. That was a big drop off from years past, but it's like he walked a lot more last year. If that's good or bad, time will tell. But Adelis seems to be this dude now. He's going to be 31, so he's one of the older guys actually that we talked about so far at this position. But a real solid player. If you don't need a, he's not going to crush your batting average. He's not going to, you know, help you either. But what's your thoughts on Adelis? Because he's a guy that most people kind of gave up on. He's actually finally going ahead of one of my boys. That's who's up next. And for years, that was not the case.
Yeah, I take your boy next before Adelis. But first real like batting average risk, I think, in the category, the projection for Adelis is 243 on the batting average. And so there is some downside risk to where, like, if Adelis hits 243 and continues not to steal, you're kind of getting like a three category guy, and those three categories, runs, homers, and RBI are pretty damn sweet, especially in that lineup. But there is some risk to that. I don't know why Adelis Garcia did not run last year. He stole the 9 bases on just 10 attempts. He's 9 for 10. Like maybe Texas was just so good.
No, that team ran. That's the thing. Like,
yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right.
That's they ran. Like, this is the question I've been wondering on other things looking at him. They do run.
But like, why not Adelis?
Maybe spot in the order, like you had guys in front of him or something. I don't know, but yeah,
he's not old. Same thing. Age 31 season. You already mentioned his age, but like to go from 16 bags to 25 bags down to 9, that is a little bit of a concern for me. But still, think he's a fine. He's a fine pick. I just like I like the next guy a little bit more.
100%. That next guy is Mr. Swag himself. boots on the ground, as they say. Just one of the most consistently, when fantasy baseball is supposed to be fun, Randy Arozarena brings the fun to the yard. And I'm just a tremendous, I've been on this bandwagon for a few years, folks. So this ain't a joke. ADP of 51 feels to me like I'm just shooting from the hip here. One of the lower ADPs for him in a while, which kind of surprises me after a 254 yes. season. 23 homers, 22. So another 2020 season. That's his third straight 2020 season. Counting stats were not too shabby either. 95 runs, 83 RBIs. He's basically been this dude 2020 for 3 straight years. Like, that is so incredibly amazing to just write down in your book. Like, just, and he's projected to do the same thing this year. I love Randy. I have many shares of Randy. I probably talked too long about a guy that I could have said draft Randy. Your thoughts.
Dude, you're just, you're on a roll, just waxing poetic over the Randy man. Full agree. Cannot argue with 600 plus plate appearances in 2020, each of the last three seasons. Plays every day. He's not a victim of the Rays platoon deal, which isn't as big of a thing, I think, as most people think. Had a really bad second half. Hit 217 with just 17 home runs. But like the skills, they're fine. The skills and the skills even in the second half weren't that bad. Even started to be the funny thing with the Rosarena was like he would just run all the time and wasn't really all that successful.
They never told him not to. He just run as much as he could and just prayed to get like 60%.
Yeah. But like even in the second half, he stole 13 and actually had an 81% success rate. So like I think if you look into that second half, I think you're getting a little bit too cute again. And so just pencil in 2020 with a decent batting average. Capital B balance. I love Randy Rosarena, where he's going, particularly considering the next two alternatives.
And the only, if I have to put any rain on the Rosarena parade, which trust me, I don't want to, he's been all offseason like rumored as a potential trade candidate. Not saying that's going to hurt him, but you never know. Like if they trade into the wrong situation, that could get weird. I doubt it would, but that would be the only bit of hesitation I could have on Randy. But that's not going to stop me from drafting him. I'm just saying that could maybe be why some trepidation is going on
there. Yeah. You do want him to stay in Tampa Bay.
Heck yes, because you'll have that nice spot in the order playing every day. All right, now it gets fun. A player that I loved last year, had in DCs, Fab, you name it, Nolan Jones. We've talked about him a ton on this show. Kerwin won't shut up about him. He won't shut up about many things, but he won't shut up about Nolan Jones. And Jones is awesome. 106 games played, went 2020, hit 297. Now, I'm going to let you have the floor here first because there's a lot of this part's good, this part's scary, this part, there's a lot of it with Nolan Jones. I get it. So what are you looking at when you see Nolan Jones in ADP of 57?
He's one of the tougher ones for me because, like, on the one hand, like everything looks great last year. Mm-hmm. Like the power speed with Nolan Jones looks just unbelievably elite. 16% barrel rate and an 85% success rate. Feel like I should have some kind of bloom board or something on guys. It might not even be the best board because it's probably only two or three people on it. That's an elite combination of power speed. Yes, the strikeouts are there. A lot has been made about like Nolan Jones's swing decisions and plate discipline. I don't think that's that big of a deal, to be honest. I take like no way he hits whatever the hell he hit last year.
297.
I think that's out of the cards, but like the ATC projection is 273. And if you just go strictly by the projections, Nolan Jones is pretty much a return on value where he's going. And you can make the case that this is him growing as a hitter. And there's another level in the baseball forecaster. We put an upside of 30-30
bingo
on Nolan Jones. The flip side of that is like, this is a dude that he was a prospect for sure, but not an elite one. And I personally have trouble spending a third, fourth round pick on someone with not like a super high prospect pedigree and not that much of an MLB track record. That's the only thing holding me back from Nolan Jones, especially compared to the relative safety of Randy Rosarena. But I certainly understand the pick. I'm a little surprised the price is this high, but again, the more you deep in, the more you dive in, it is justifiable.
Yeah, this is like the 30-30 claims, like the lazy approach to it is, well, he only played 106 games last year. If he plays them like 150 this year, like do the math. Like that's the lazy way about it. We know that's not how baseball works all the time. You can't just project things that way. But you could also see it. That's the weird part. I could see the speed a lot more than the power. That's the other thing is I could see like 20 to 25 home runs because, you know, we know Coors more batting average than power. But the dude can run. He's got really good speed. And I think that's going to do wonders. He's going to play every day. He's going to hit in the middle of the Rockies lineup, good or bad, whatever that is. It's still 81 games in Coors Field, which is always good. I'm a fan. I still have Randy over him. But, like, if you miss out on Randy, I think this is a phenomenal fallback option. Let's put it that way. I think there's a lot to like there with Nolan Jones. Yeah, just like you said, though, the number one thing is don't expect the batting average, even though it's a BABIP park and he's got a high BABIP, over 400 BABIP last year. So there's a benefit there. But I think there is batting average regression when you do have that much swing and miss. That's definitely a concern.
Just real quick, diving into a little bit on the minor league side, I'll just throw this at you. What was his previous career high stolen base total in the minors?
I know it wasn't much. No. That's another thing that's been talked about. Like, let's say it was 8.
It was 10. It was 10 in 2021. And he's never hit more than 13 homers in a season in the high minors. So that's what I mean with the track record. Like, I guess it's a little worrisome.
I guess the pushback I give is last year he turned 25.
Yep.
No, like, and you said his age, like he could still be developing. Like we just waxed about Michael Harris and these other guys. Like, what's to stop Nolan Jones from taking steps? And that's where I think we've talked about it in past episodes, how both of us have to start realizing like there's these steps and guys we got to start believing in more than once we see like at least something, we got to start believing type thing. And I have trouble drafting Nolan Jones because I guess I enjoyed that like free price tag last year and having to pay for it now, which is a dumb way to draft. I 100% acknowledge that should not be a part of the process, but let's be real. If you don't think that way, you're just not a human being. Like, you really, like, cost analysis is a big thing in life. And that is one.
I found this guy last year. He should be cheap for me because I uncovered him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, this is ridiculous. He got like a 400 ADP jump. What are we doing here? But that happens in baseball. That happens more often than we think. Cody Bellinger. ADP of 62, the homeless Comey Bellinger right now. But he doesn't have a home. Like, literally, he doesn't. Not a baseball team.
I mean, he probably has a house, some walls, and a roof.
He's a baseball teamless Cody Bellinger. That just doesn't roll off the tongue the same way. 26 home runs, 20 steals last year. Hit .307. That ain't happening again. Really good ball player. I'm just that kind of guy that now Bellinger's still not super old, but just the inconsistencies in year-to-year production, I'm not buying this right now. I know other people love him. I'm not, to each their own, but I'm not in on Cody. Like, I don't think he does the whole five categories again for you, especially batting average
and maybe even power. I mean, we talked about him in the first barrel episode since that episode. Yeah, I did do a board on homer in a barrel, and I think Bellinger, I don't have it right in front of me, but it was something like the same number of home runs and barrels, which is not good. Like, typically, very general rule of thumb is typically it's twice as many barrels to home runs. And Cody Bellinger, the new feature I added this year was how many of those barrels were pulled, because pulled barrels are much more effective than center or opposite field ones. And it's not like Cody Bellinger was even pulling his power. So I worry about the batting average. I worry about the power. Hope he finds a house soon.
Okay, got it for you. I found it. I knew I'd find it here. I pulled up your tweeter here. And Bellinger, 26 homers, 26 barrels. It's 100% home run to barrel rate with 58% pulled. He was basically the third best home run to barrel rate in baseball behind TJ Friedl, who we've talked about plenty, and obviously Isak Paredes. So
third luckiest, you may say.
Third luckiest, that is sure. All right, let's flip over to the next 15. That was the top 15, number 16 here. After about a 14 pick and ADP drop, we get to Mike Trout, ADP of 76. Lowest number we've seen Trout probably in our lifetimes. Let's put it that way. After his, you know, rookie season. Once he became Mike Trout, we have never seen this. And it was a rough year for Trout, obviously. You know, the average was okay, but, you know, 18 home runs, 2 steals, 82 games. Playing time's just been disastrous for him recently. I understand the argument at this ADP. There is a little bit of a gamble that might be worth it here. It's not my cup of tea.
Agreed. And it sucks, but definitely agreed. And not only because of the injuries, but the batting average has been like, okay. And he doesn't run. So like the batting average projection for Trout is .273. At 3 steals, I'd even take the under on that. But like, he's got to play a full season to make a pretty good return on that value. And maybe he does at some point. Like, he's still just, what, 32? But hasn't been able to do it in 4 years. Last year was a little fluky with the fractured hand, but I don't think we can keep giving Mike Trout passes for injuries. And still, yes, the ADP is cheaper, but still a little bit too early where I'm going to go out on that injury limb.
Yep, I'm with you. Like, honestly, as a baseball fan, I hope I'm wrong. But
yeah. I'd love to see him in the playoffs, but
yeah. Would have loved to see him with Shohei in the playoffs, but that won't be happening.
But he can do it with Luis Rengifo. So
that's darn straight. Rengifo, Drury. We know it won't be. We know it won't be Rendon. That's way too many games at that point. So that won't be happening. Next up on the list here, one pick after Mike Trout, Jazz Chisholm Jr. ADP of 77. This is where I sound like a complete hypocrite. Wasn't in on Mike Trout. I'm very interested in Jazz Chisholm at 77 because I know what? I know the injury concerns here. But even in 97 games, 19 homers, 22 steals with a 250 average, like at that point in the draft, still rich value, not denying that. You can get replacement value at some point in time and have some fun here. Like, I'm willing to take a chance here because he gives you the power speed. Trout does not give you the speed at all. That's where I'm interested in a guy like Jazz Chisholm. You know, the average is low, but that power speed combo, we're addressing Adelis Garcia potentially if you ratio the two out. There's the 2020 upside as we keep going down this draft board starts disappearing. Jazz brings you 30-30 upside if you ever played a full season, maybe 30-40 type stuff. So I love Jazz. I love the drop in ADP. You still had to pay for him last year. I am interested in Jazz Chisholm Jr. Let me clarify, though. I actually don't think I have any shares of Jazz Chisholm, but I am excited about the ADP of 77.
Yeah, so just like Aaron Judge can't hit home runs with his ground balls, Jazz can't go 30-30 from the IL. So just those couple facts for you there, man.
You can have Jazz Chisholm bets too, then. Add that to your list.
Fascinating Jazz Chisholm thing in our draft today. I had the opportunity to take Jazz Chisholm at a round and a half after his ADP in our first pitch speaker league in the middle of the seventh round, and I did not. I took Brian Reynolds. Brian Reynolds instead. So that tells you where I'm at with Jazz. You were picking four picks later. I'm assuming you would have taken – Jazz was taking the next pick after me. Jeff Erickson took him in the seventh round. You were close to being able to get a seventh round Jazz Chisholm.
That would have been sexy.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
For me, it's not just the injuries. Well, yes, it is the injuries.
I'll say, yeah.
It's the nature of the injuries is what I was getting at. Again, man, been a long freaking week. Last year was three separate things. It was a hamstring, an oblique, and a turf toe. Like, you don't...
Don't put him in the outfield. We tried saying it.
But he's going to be in the outfield
again next year. I know.
So he had the surgery. So Jazz had the surgery to correct, we think, the turf toe. But, like, again, it's not just the injuries. It's the type. It's that lower body core muscle injuries that just keep coming up for Jazz Chisholm. 383 plate appearances last year, 240 the year before. Like, bad against lefties over the last two seasons. I'm not saying Miami will platoon Jazz Chisholm.
They've moved down in the order, though. That's been a proven thing.
Yeah, who else do they have? But they will move him down the order. So just – and then the batting average thing, I don't know. Like I said, I passed him on the seventh round, a round and a half after ADP in the draft today. So I – think that's probably I could have stopped there.
I get the concerns. I'm not going to knock the concerns. I just, you know, I'd like the drop off in ADP here compared to previous seasons where I'm intrigued here. What I will say is the next player with an ADP of 84, how I mentioned, I had like a 180 on Michael Harris. I'm almost to a 180 on Josh Lowe. There are maybe some platoon concerns, but as a whole, we saw a great year from Josh Lowe this past year. Played in 135 games, 20 home runs, 32 steals, hit .292. The average, I think, is a bit suspect, but the power speed is legit. And this is another 2020 bat here. And the platoon risks should be a bit lower than expected. When we talked about Lowe in recent years, at least when I talked to Jason Collette, he was a little more optimistic about running him out there. Because even towards the end of the season, we saw Josh Lowe playing against left-handed pitching. We saw that actually happening with the Rays. So I'm starting to be a little more on the optimistic side of a Josh Lowe here. And if you wanted to say low over Chisholm, I'd be okay with that.
Interesting. No, you covered that really well. Just another example of someone who, Josh Lowe is free in drafts last year. Don't give up on some of these guys who are legitimate prospects and struggle for even multiple years in the big leagues. I probably should do something of like this year's Josh Lowe. I'm sure everyone will write something like it, but how many guys are like that are very cheap in drafts in 2024 that were prospects and just haven't done anything yet? Be an interesting comp to run, but no, you covered him well. I somewhat concerned about the platoon, but like you said, he was playing against lefties at the end of the year, so they've got some faith.
Yep, got to have faith, as George Michaels once said. Justin Mason's in the chat now saying, "Hey guys," so he's bored on a Thursday night. Also, appreciate you. Yep. We'll do a few more here and see where we can get to before next episode. But Christian Yelich, ADP of 86, just kind of the steady Eddie. I know last year we talked about him. We started believing, okay, this is the guy he is. 14-19. Well, he went 19-28. Proved us wrong there. Hit 275. Had an even better season than he did in 2022. And we were like, I remember discussing him on the preview going, we'd be cool with the 2022 version of Christian Yelich at the ADP. And now you got a better version. So, I think he's somewhere in between that guy. I don't think we're ever going to see the MVP guy that we agreed on that. Quality production at the top of an amazing Milwaukee lineup, of course.
Of course. I just, the only thing I worry about with Yelich is the back.
Like, well, that's a very valid thing.
This is still early picks and in draft and holds where the replacement level can be so bad you don't have Fab to back it up. Like, I do worry about Yelich recurring over multiple seasons with back issues. Went on the IL late last season with back problems. Doesn't just go away. I mean, that said, Yelich has had 671 and 632 plate appearances over the last two seasons, respectively. So it hasn't really cost him. But I just, it's enough of a worry that I'm taking my man Brian Reynolds over him in drafts, but certainly get the case for Yelich. Like, everything we saw last year was pretty legitimate. 90% stolen base success rate. Power came back. Yes, he hits a ton of ground balls, but he optimizes his power quite well at HQ. We had a 21 expected home runs on his 19 actual home runs last year. So the StatCast stuff certainly supports what Yelich did in the power department last year.
Yeah, well, leads us to your guy, your boy, Brian Reynolds, ADP of 94, coming off 263, 24, and a career-high 12 stolen bases. I'll let you have the floor. I won't even go here. This is your guy. So what do you got on Brian Reynolds?
It's just a consistent package. The last 3 years in home runs, 24, 27, 24. Stole 12 bags last year at a 92% success rate. I think he gets bagged because he's on Pittsburgh. But as we talked about, I think a little bit last episode with Cabrian Hayes, like the top half of that Pittsburgh lineup, not bad. So I think Brian Reynolds, again, just kind of gives you that balance at 80 or at 94 ADP going ahead of like Kyle Schwarber, who is not balanced. I think it's a fine pick. The projections for Reynolds have him the 40th. Overall hitter, and he's the 52nd hitter off the board. So there is some projected value there for Reynolds.
I agree. He's the 20th outfielder off the board. And I'm going to say we stop there on a nice round number at 20, and we'll move on. We'll do some listener questions here. But before we head to the listener questions, I did want to ask you real quick here. Justin's got a question in here. Who doesn't love a consistent package? Danielle, apparently. Or are we saying something else, Mason? Never mind. I should just be quiet real quick and not turn this one to Sleeper in the Bus after dark. All F-pass right.
Style.
Yeah, F-pass style. So the top 20 outfielders, and we're going to keep going and outfielders, but you can already kind of see it towards the end here, Ryan, where you're definitely not getting the five category guys. You're starting to see a few more bumps or chinks in the armor, I should say. And it's going to get worse and worse, obviously, as we go down. And it's been a discussion point, especially in five outfielder leagues, that you need to get more often than not get some outfielders early. Let's put it that way. Like, I was saying something like, you know, in the first 10 rounds, you want at least two, maybe three. I want a real comfortable outfield base. That maybe is me. After these top 20, how are you kind of looking at the early outfield pool?
As I look at my team that in the first pitch league.
And well, in labor last year, you had five in the first 10.
Through nine rounds, Brian Reynolds is my only outfielder. So that'll be fun to fill in. I agree with that, especially. So we have talked about other positions where there's just, you know, like second base, if you don't get your speed early, it completely falls off. First base, there's nothing there. Catcher, there's nothing there. You do need to prioritize. I think there are a lot more speed options early for outfielders. And so that's just kind of another tick against taking like a Yordan Alvarez. It's just a opportunity cost of not getting bags at a position where there are a good number of stolen base guys, at least in this top 20. Make a great point. After 20, it totally dies. Jesus. There's a couple guys like Lane Thomas for 15, maybe George Springer, if you believe in 14 bags from him. But yeah, certainly need to think you need to prioritize bags early for stolen base, unless you've got some other strategy up your sleeve.
Yeah, and that's one reason why I think I want to get two, if not three, in the top 10, mix in at least one middle infielder, even though there's some after this, you know, top 10 rounds we've talked about you can get with some speed. But that was one of the bigger takeaways from, it was one of your boards or something you mentioned, one of the middle infield pods, like you were saying, that pretty much majority of speed comes from the middle infield and the outfield. That's just been like a proven thing. So don't sleep on it as you're going through the draft is what I'm trying to say. All right, we got some listener questions here for you. You guys came through once again, and we'll start here again. We're going to try to stay a lot out of the weeds as we can, but at Strafus 23 says, what other sites are out there as alternatives to NFBC? Any other sites have high stakes baseball like they do? I know Fantrax and Yahoo do.
It might depend on your definition of high stakes, but I do know Fantrax has some higher dollar leagues. I know Yahoo does too. I don't know how much high dollar. I play on mostly NFBC. I love the platform. I play on TatWars. We play on Roto, which is very customizable. Leave it at that one. Labor, I do like, there's RT Sports, which isn't like as well known as your bigger ESPN, Yahoo's, that sort of thing. I really like the RT Sports format. I don't know if they have like high stakes or what their dollar things are, but Justin in the chat says Fantrax and Yahoo have $1,000 leagues. I did not know that's Yahoo started going that high.
I thought I've seen that. You can get in there. Not a ton of them, not like a massive pool. There's no overall, but they do have leagues.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I've not played Yahoo in forever. I actually like that. This may sound like sacrilege, but I actually like the ESPN interface.
We are done. 102 episodes was good, guys. 102 was really good.
I'm in a points league. This is the league that got me into fantasy like 20 years ago with my family. It's a daily moves points league. Dude, it's slick. It's slick. I like it. I haven't played Roto there forever. I have no idea, but
I'll say I'm not going to knock it, because as long as you're playing and having fun, that's the premise of fantasy baseball. So, and Justin's with you. He likes ESPN. Justin just likes to play.
Justin just likes
to play anywhere they'll let you. I've only played football on ESPN recently. I have not done baseball in forever. So I'm. Come on. That's why I'll stop with my jokes. I'll just stop. I'll be nice. Nice Bubba over here. Dave Petraziello asks, let's pretend for a minute that Langford and Chirio both start in the majors and obviously play every day. Who do you like better for this year? I will take Wyatt Langford.
I will also take Wyatt Langford, who we did finally correct our HQ projection on Wyatt Langford, but still over in partial season, we're projecting 270, 15 homers, 12 steals in a better lineup. Like, yeah, it's Wyatt Langford for me.
Yep, 100% agree with you. Give me Wyatt Langford over Trio for sure. Calling my shot, our buddy has a couple questions here for us. How do you evaluate one category bats? Guys like Schwarber, who we'll get to start next episode, Gallo, Peak Birdie, Miles Straw, Luis Arraez, DJ the Mayhew, and Coors. At their best, these guys always have strong Razzball play rate or finishes that actively hurt your team in 3+ categories. Is winning one category worth the pain of others? No, not to me, it isn't.
Agreed. And the big thing too, so I've made this example at least once or twice on this show, but I had Esteri Ruiz in our draft and hold league last year on my team with like Acuna and a couple other base deal guys. there's a different, like, I could not use Esteri Ruiz. So he would get all these steals, but I was already so far ahead in first that it did nothing for my team. So with these one category guys, not only do they have to hit and like stay healthy, and you don't have that balance that I've been talking about all episode, you do these all in, you know, all eggs in one basket type guys, like they need to stay healthy or else your strategy is kind of thrown. But then the other thing is you can get so far ahead in a certain category that Esteri Ruiz could have stole 100 bases last year, earned, you know, $55 in Razzball Roto net value, but 20 of those or 80 of those 100 bags were useless to my team. So I will add, in trading leagues, I'm more open to it because you can kind of build a bank and get ahead in a category and then trade out of it. But in leagues where you can't trade, like, it's, for me, it's very tough to go for those one category guys.
He also adds, do you knock a little bit of their projected dollar value because of the unevenness of their production? Asking for a friend, definitely not as someone making ranks for an upcoming listener league auction.
There we go. Still in. I love it. Would I knock a couple dollars off? I don't know. I guess.
I would, because to me it's not like you, we want balanced packages on this show.
Yes, we want balanced packages. So I mean,
get on that.
Yeah, he's listening. Highly doubtful.
Justin's listening. That's good enough.
That's right. Last thing we need is a Justin Mason shirt with a
balanced package.
let's go to the next question.
Thomas Travato says, Josh Lowe versus Christian Yelich versus Seiya Suzuki versus Teoscar Hernandez. The projection is all so similar for all four. If you get two of them and around one to two outfielder, this is a viable strategy for outfielders in a three outfielder league. A three outfielder league, heck yeah, and 100%. Yeah, that's a very viable strategy.
And I would take Seiya Suzuki over Lowe and Yelich. I am.
You are Team Seiya.
Very high Suzuki, so maybe my bias is coming in there. You don't sound as convinced.
I like Seiya, and I could be totally wrong on him. This is the problem we talk about. Like, the young players where I've seen it, I know there's another level is one thing. Seiya, we saw it, but there's just, it wasn't the whole, I don't know. I'm bad with Seiya. Some of these guys I'm just really bad with. I need to spend more time on.
You've never liked him that much.
No, I really like the foreign players. I have a very difficult time like getting a grasp on and like getting behind until I see it a little longer. Mm-hmm. So that's where my problem is. But there are things with Seiya, like the quality of contact is really good. I won't deny that. Like, there are very promising things there. So maybe I should reevaluate that. I like Teoscar a lot in LA. He just won't run much. So if you have good speed early, you're good. But I'd probably go like Josh Lowe. I'd give you Seiya a second because I think you're right. There is something there. And then I go Teoscar, then Christian Yelich. But that's a really good four. Like, I'd be cool with any of those guys on my team.
Yeah,
especially on three outfielders.
Yep.
All right. At Taylor_Bauer11 says, do you buy Suzuki second half? I believe that's a yes.
Yeah. I mean, his second half at 319. So not going to happen. But I do. I say Suzuki missed the first 2 weeks of the season with an oblique injury. Had some neck issues in June. I think he was pretty beat up in the first half.
Yes,
he was. I think you can make the case that once those cleared up, the strikeout rate went way down. The barrel rate went way up. Just everything looked really good in the second half. And again, I don't want to nitpick first half and cherry pick first for second half. But I think when there's health involved, you can lean a little bit more on the half that he was healthier. And so I am buying that second half. Not the full 320, but I don't know what the hell is the projection. Where's he at? 270? Yeah,
270, that's pretty
good. Might even take the over on that.
Taylor also says, I would take Riley Green over half these guys. Am I nuts? If you can tell, I am a sucker for a specific profile. I want to say something on this first, because this is why I love doing my team preview shows. I was a heavy Riley Green guy early, and I've backed off tremendously just because I need to see spring training now, because Marty Tallman was on the show and he follows the beat writer as well. And yes, Riley Green, I believe, reported early and he's working in the cages and stuff, but the shoulder injury he suffered was not good at all. And it's one of those that might take a lot longer to gain any sort of power back. like Mason's in the chat saying Riley Green is not a good fantasy player. I'm concerned with that right now as well. He's going to have to prove to me that he's back type thing. That's me. I don't know. I don't know if you have anything else on that, but when I heard that, that's because I didn't see those reports, and that was like, ooh, crikeys.
No, that I got nothing to add. Okay. That was good.
Randy Leeson says, more likely to have a 30-30 season, Nolan Jones or Jazz Chisholm? Now, that is a phenomenal question. Nolan Jones.
Jazz Chisholm.
Oh, look at you. I thought you'd pick Nolan Jones because of the injury concerns with Jazz Chisholm.
Damn. Jazz Chisholm. Let's go.
Jazz Chisholm. Well, yeah.
The dude is projected for 30-30.
Yeah, no, I love Jazz.
Pretty much.
I'm just glad you said it. I was trying to set you up for success there, and you said it. So pretty pumped on that. Raging Randall says zero shares of Belly there. I agree. I don't have any Bellinger there. I know some people that are extremely high on that price tag. I'm just not one of them. Ed DiCario, our buddy, says, crazy how many of these top 30 outfielders I don't like at their current prices. The problem is, Ed, the next 30 outfielders are that's why the prices are there.
The grass isn't greener from 30 to 60. You got to have five of these guys in a lot of leagues. Yeah. So,
Justin Mason says Riley Green is like a Milky Cabrera type profile. That's pretty good. And then I wanted to throw in here a little comedic relief to finish the show. Our good buddy Alan De Laurentiis. I'm going 20-20 this year. 20 failed attempts at keto, 20 cortisone injections for my bulging disc.
That's good. I love Alan. That's awesome. And then another misconception of 30-30 with Jazz with a 30 plate appearance, 30 at bat season from Justin.
Yes, Mason. If you can't read through the lines there, folks, he doesn't walk very often.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Good question by Ed, though. That it leans me a little bit more to take an outfielder in that first round.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Honestly. And that's why I think we see 12 of them go in the first round. And like, or not 12 of them, I meant eight. Top 12 picks. And you throw Yordan in there at pick 19, you know, you wouldn't be shocked if you see him on a 1-2 turn in a draft. And so now you're talking nine guys potentially. It is kind of crazy that you only get nine of the top 30. That's a gap. But you think, and maybe that gets pushed up, maybe more Michael Harris love. Maybe like I mentioned with Lubob, maybe people start coming back to a second round Lubob pretty soon. It wouldn't shock me by any means. And that's why I'm probably not like diligent in the draft room meta, but I'm trying to make sure I get at least a couple outfielders early enough that I have at least a base of at least two outfielders, because it gets rough, really rough. But to the extent is you don't want to sell out your other positions. And that's the thing, is don't like make a point to get three or four outfielders in the first 10 rounds and just completely blow right up another position. Why would you do that? Who would do that? But well,
it's the predicament in any 15 team league, at least. And I keep using 15 teams because that's mostly what I play. It's just like, yeah, so let's get three early outfielders, get your early closer, get your two aces.
Yeah, there's like six picks now.
Yeah, four can't picks do that. That's like nine guys to get in six rounds. And so,
and folks, this is why you don't draft an early catcher. You're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, catcher man has spoken.
Just telling you, the depth this year has zero reason to draft an early catcher. And I know people tell me I'm wrong because of blah, 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 blah. And you're probably right, but I don't care because I want to get these other positions. And that's where my bread is getting buttered. So, yeah, I'm really like, I know we still got like five or six, maybe seven more preview episodes because we're breaking all these up. But I'm so looking forward to our pockets that we do, because that'll really, really kind of lighten up our strategy of what we're saying now about taking position players. It'll bring it even more to life when we start looking at those pockets of what we can do type thing. I'm pumped on that. But all right, Mr. Bloomfield, final thoughts. We got through 20. I think our goal will be at least 20, maybe more, because it'll go a little quicker here as the production levels drop off. That was a great top 20 that we really need to break down, especially if we're promoting taking two to three guys in the first 10 rounds. You should probably know about them a little more. But final thoughts on this preview part one for the outfielders.
Should have known we wouldn't get to 30. Should have known.
I kind of said that. I said you throw 30, you hope for, you know, a certain number.
You've been doing a few more shows in your day than I have. Mm-hmm.
You leave the 30 because it gives you a window. It's a strategy.
Exactly. So what, we'll do 20 through 40 next week plus
give or take
plus some late shots.
Maybe,
or something.
Maybe we'll do three outfield episodes. What's it matter at this point? Maybe we'll do two more next week, and then we'll go into pitching the week after. It's all good and good around these parts.
Yeah. So,
final thoughts on anything? Is that it? You good? Checking.
No, okay. I'm fried. I'm good.
All right. Well, I don't know you guys, but I'm gonna go get a beer. Hope you have a good weekend, everybody. Listener League, all that good stuff. We'll be back with you guys on Tuesday with part two of the outfield, as we mentioned. And hopefully I have some more information for you guys in the coming days. We'll see. It's up in the air. But check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. And until next time, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 102. Catch you all next time. Thank you.